Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We have made the merger of the streams. You go out to WNST.net. You will find us now at BaltimorePositive.com, not .com. That's another place. That's on the political section, but you got to go to .com first to be able to do that. We get together so often with our friends from Boston, whether it was the Red Sox and the Orioles playing six series a year, April, May, June, July, August, or whether it's this sort of nasty thing over the last two decades that have brought Tom Brady and Joe Flacco and then Joe Flacco and Cam Newton and then Dan Shaughnessy and Nestor Aparicio back together again. Dan, a few things. I found an old picture from the 1999 Super Bowl going through the merger, putting all this together, of a piece where you and me and Bill Walton sat together. And you and Bill knew each other real well, and you sort of got me over a little bit because I was a snot-nosed kid from Baltimore. And you regaled me with 20 minutes of tales and relationship and John Wooden stories. That's on the front of the new BaltimorePositive.com. There's my little plug for that. But I just want to say thank you for your friendship all these years. You always say yes. You always come on. You always say something intelligent. We don't usually yell at each other. So I appreciate that, man. How are you?
Good. That's really interesting. I wish I could find that if we did 20 minutes on the radio back then with Bill, did we?
Bill Walton sat down with us in San Diego right between the woman from the San Diego Zoo and I think at that time was probably Paul McGuire or somebody or Jim Mora coming by or Ernie Accorsi or George Young, people that would sit with me back in the era of just 22 years ago, third or fourth Super Bowl I went to, and there's Bill Walton sitting there talking about the Grateful Dead with you and the Celtics with you. So it's all up there. I have, I archive all this stuff, strangely enough. And I think I have every conversation I've ever had with you or Bob Ryan or any of you guys because I treasure these conversations,
If you can find that, you send that along. I'm actually working on a book on my Celtic days. I covered that team when Bill was here, 82 through 86. And it was such a delight having him here because, he's just a year older than me, but watching UCLA when I was in college and just what he was then. And of course his NBA career, winning the championship in Portland and then having him in Boston, he lived in Cambridge and he had all these four little boys, the giant heads of hair. And Luke became kind of a famous guy. But I just tried to reach, I communicated with Bill yesterday. He's going to help me, once you get Bill telling stories, it's over. I mean, he is Mr. Hyperbole. He goes on and on. So if you can find that, I'm interested because I'd love to go back in time and hear what we said back then.
This is a good time to talk to you about my transition because, all I ever wanted to do, was be you, right? Or to be Phil Jackman or to be Oscar Madison or to be where Ken Rosenthal, who I was his first sort of dude on the phone in the middle of the night from the earthquake in, San Francisco in 89 when we all worked together at the Evening Sun. Where are you in all of this, brother? I mean, I look back to see when I had you and Ryan and, the whole Boston Mafia. I miss Nick Cafardo, who the last time he came on gave me 20 minutes on Angelos and the Orioles and just all this amazing stuff. So shout out to everybody that loved him, including you. But, I would say through all of this, I've moved to storytelling because I don't know that box scores are going to sell anymore. The last time you guys came on, you told me the Red Sox aren't even the biggest deal in Boston. And now I watch the Patriots play, and they're not the Patriots anymore. And we're going to figure that out this week, and that's why I'm having you on. But I think for all of us who built a kingdom and a life around sports, boy, this plague's going to change something, isn't it?
No, it's a good point, and I think I like the way you're thinking there. The storytelling is critical now, and, old bastards like me are the guys who that's all we do now. When we were still gathering and getting together with the young writers and press boxes or traveling, whatever, it'd be fun to have the young people around. And because, all my hackneyed old stories were all new to them. So you kind of get the wide eyed people when you're talking about, it could be Brooks Robinson, Reggie Jackson, Jim Rice, anything from back in the day. And now I'm into the Larry Bird. I'm living in the past, literally going through this book. I'm like living 40 years ago in the early 80s with my Celtic years. And one thing, Nestor, we got to do it when it was the most fun is how I look back. I don't bay at the moon or wish it was like the old days. I understand how, newspapers are somewhat irrelevant now and the print model's going away. And it's different platforms, how people get their information, how they get their entertainment. And that's okay. That's evolution. That's the way it's supposed to go. So, I feel very blessed to have had a wonderful career, and I owe so much thanks to my friends in Baltimore, Bill Tanton, who hired me in 1977, and you referenced Phil Jackman, who's a Worcester guy, and he looked out for me. I was 23 years old, arrived in Baltimore. I had never written a check. My first check was written to Stebbins Anderson, the hardware place.
There you go. I bought you a lived across the Kenilworth, did you?
I lived at Kenilworth at Charles, right at the Beltway there, exit 25, across from Ruxton Tower. There was these apartments up the hill. You know, it was just a great time of life, and the people of Baltimore were so nice to me. I'll never forget that, because I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to do anything, and it was really the first time I was independent, living on my own, and what a place to do that, to be in Baltimore at that time, because people were so nice, and it was really the time that I believe the town really just took off, you know, with the marketplace and the Orioles, and I know the Colts were leaving. That was unfortunate, but hey, you got your Ravens now, so that's all good.
Well, you were here 77, 78, right?
I did the Orioles right through the strike of 81, but I was in Towson 77, 78, and then I moved down to Alexandria. I worked for the Washington Star, but I still covered the Orioles. So I was coming up every day and, had friends. I could crash at people's homes up here. In Baltimore, and it was just a great time. 5 years covering the Orioles, the best 5 years I had.
You know what I loved about the Washington Star as a kid who loved, I mean, I was a newspaper complete junkie. You know, my dad got the News American and the Baltimore Sun and the Evening Sun. I would get on the side. My grandfather got that. My neighbors got it. I read it all the time. But the Washington Star I loved because you had the wrestling results from the Capitol Center. So you know what I mean? When that happened, that was great. Dan Shaughnessy is here from Boston, from the Boston Globe. We got Patriots. I had Pluto on a couple weeks ago because we played the Browns, and you know, I know Terry over the years, and I think his ABA books is fine a book as I've sports book as I've read this side of Seasons in Hell and Mike Shropshire and the Life and Times of the Texas Rangers. I read a lot of books, man. You know, I mean, I've written a couple of sports books, but this is all I ever wanted to do, and to sort of see the end of it as we know it. I'm only 52, man. I got a lot of life left in me, right? And I can talk about those days and all of that stuff, but there is something about like Earl Weaver stories or Burt Jones stories or that era that I'm 11 or 12 or 13. The 79 Orioles for me were like my dad and I going to G&A Coney Island Hot Dog in Island Town. I went to 42 games that summer. I was 10 years old. I turned 11 during the World Series and lost to the Pirates. But your experience with all of that was literally like you're in the pictures down on the field with Howard Cosell afterward, right?
Yeah, it was those years. So I came on board in 77. Of course, 79, that was kind of a wire-to-wire job. We got to Miami, and you could kind of see they were ready to take off. And, you know, the Yanks had won the World Series in 77, 78. And, you know, Mike Flanagan exploded that year, went 23-9. And, you know, they had Cakes going, as usual, Cy Young caliber season. Scotty McGregor was, as usual, 16 wins, who would always pitch like a 2-hour and 20-minute game, by the way, a six-hitter, very economical game. You know, let the guys get themselves out. Dennis Martinez was coming on then. It's just like being a little kid. I could recite the entire roster.
I feel my box scores right now. I want to get my pen and make sure I get Sammy Stewart and see if he went two innings late in the game.
It was so great. And when I first got on the beat, every coach of that team became a major league manager. Jim Hunter, Jim Fry, George Bamberger, Frank Robinson, and Cal Ripken. They were the coaches. They all became big league managers of one level or another.
Billy Hunter, too, yeah.
Yeah, Billy Hunter went to the Rangers on June 23rd, 1977. We were in Cleveland. And he'd been waving guys home from the third base.
Dude, you're like Mary Lou Henner with the Orioles. Holy cow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, and it was just – we were in Cleveland, and I just started. And they said, the third base coach is going to Texas. And so he and Earl would get together out there. Man, I don't want to bore you, but it was good.
You don't bore me. I'm about to ask you where you were when Munson died because I know the Orioles were involved in that, so I feel like you may have.
August 2nd, 1979. That was a Thursday. And Edward Bennett Williams bought the Orioles from Gerald Hofberger on Thursday, August 2nd. And that was the same day Thurman's plane went down. Also the day that Tony La Russa was first hired by the White Sox, 1979. Look it up, Thursday, August 2nd.
Was that also the night that Edward Bennett Williams went out to dinner in D.C. and they sung Take Me Out to the Ball Game to him thinking that they had stolen the Orioles?
I don't know because I was in New York doing a piece to advance the Yankee-Orioles series because the Orioles were going to New York for a 4-game series Friday through Monday. And of course,
and that was a big deal in 1979. Big deal in my life as a 10-year-old kid, right?
And the Yanks had been in Chicago, and the Orioles were in Milwaukee. So I went to Chicago and joined the Yankees and hung out to write a piece on them on Wednesday night. Everybody dispersed, and Thurman crashed his plane on Thursday. I was literally on hold for George Steinbrenner when Mickey Morabito, the PR guy, came on and said, George isn't going to be able to talk to you. And I saw the TV light up, and it had Thurman's plane had crashed, and that was the end of that. And the next night, the Orioles had opened the four-game series, and that's when they left the catcher's box empty. And I think the guy who was the catcher, he just coached for the Red Sox this year. But in any event, it was a very emotional series, and they buried Thurman on Monday, and Mercer got the winning hit Monday night. It was any of those guys would tell you that was an emotional time for them.
Dan, I came to you, I guess, to talk Patriots and Ravens. I sort of guess. I mean, it was a little weird watching Flacco run around out there and flick it around in a Jets helmet. And I guess sort of weird for all of you with Tom Brady and whatever that was on Sunday night. But whatever that was before then, give me a little state of the Patriots as you see it in the 50,000 feet from the league down. Because, you know, we're pretty good, and we're winning games, 2 touchdowns on the road in Indianapolis. Baltimore had never won in Indianapolis, Dan. Let that sink in, okay? Wow. So after all of that, we lost 6 times out there. I did not go to the game this week because I'm COVIDed up at this point with my wife and sort of staying home and staying out of the fray. I went to a couple of games last month, and I decided that, like, going to empty stadia and getting on a plane to go to Houston to do it, which I did, to sit on the roof with nobody there, was something I didn't want to do too many times in my life. And then I realized there wasn't a whole lot of value in doing it other than seeing who was hurt, who was going into the tent, and sub packages coming onto the field. And I've bowed out of it just for a little while, for a lot of reasons. But where are you? Give me a Shaughnessy look at the Patriots at this point.
I thought they'd be better. I mean, they're 3-5 going in, and I just thought they would be better because I really thought the system and the coaching and, you know, Bill's kind of – it's a little bit insulting to players' abilities, but there's a notion that the system prevails and that they can plug anybody in there. And they've done that so well over the years. But clearly Tom Brady, he left at the right time. I mean, there's not a lot of support this year. 8 guys opted out, not a lot of offensive weapons, and people have been hurt. They've had a COVID issue, so they're pretty decimated. And when you got to struggle to beat the friggin' Jets the way they did – on Monday night, that's not never a good sign. They were down by 10 points in the fourth quarter. Last time they won a game down by 10 points in the fourth quarter was the 28-3 Atlanta Super Bowl. So that tells you the magnitude and the distance from that. But it's just, you know, they almost won at Seattle. They almost won at Buffalo. They almost won at Kansas City. They didn't win any of them. And Newton, you know, came up short, you know, carried the ball in the wrong hand against Buffalo, couldn't get in from the one. But the Chiefs, the Patriots kept the Chiefs out of the end zone until late in the third quarter. They showed signs early on that they were going to compete. And now it's not there. You're 3-5 going into this weekend. The Bills have already won 7 games. So the only path to the playoffs in the AFC East this year is to win the division because those teams just – no one else is going to do it. And right now the Patriots have 3 wins. The Bills have 7. They're halfway through the season. You're not going to catch them. And it's just – It's a weird feeling that after all the success, the Pats have won that division 11 straight years, I think 16 out of 17 years. It's like the old Atlanta Braves. It's just a joke.
But we can all agree that we have had enough of this, right? So, you know, there's a part for me. Dan, I got a $29 flight up to Providence on Sunday. You know, I had it all mapped out. Yeah. Before the plague, my wife's from Manchester. We were going to, you know, do something up, find the north end and get an Italian meal or do something. None of that, right? So I have this flight. I was going to come up, and I have an early morning flight, and I'm thinking, do I want to get a room? Do I want to be up all night? There's no locker room. And then I'm thinking, man, you know, seeing this morbid version of the Patriots like I did at Old Schaefer Stadium when I chased Warren Moon up there one time, you know, back in the, I don't know, it was the Brock Huard era. I don't know what era it was, but it was a million years ago. And, you know, seeing nobody there after the pain of Billy Cundiff and Lee Evans and, you know, the nightmare of the 2-touchdown, you know, it's been monumental, the Ravens Patriots games. And I was at a couple of those Patriots Colts games, the Peyton Manning up there before that. So, and I went to a couple playoff games up there in the fog, as I remember, against the Steelers back in the 90s. So I went to a lot of games up there, but finding it sort of back at rock bottom, like Schaefer Sullivan Stadium, whatever they're calling up the road, where there's nobody there and the foghorn and nobody, and there's no Tom Brady coming. There's a little part of me that wants to go experience that, to see the pain and the anguish. But my wife even said to me on Sunday night, she's like, I felt a little sorry for Tom Brady. And I'm thinking, we're not going to turn these people into sympathetic characters at this point, Dan. I can't do it, man.
You can get that experience watching it on TV. There's really no need. There's no need.
But from a success standpoint, and maybe this really does speak to me having gone to Kansas City right after they win a World Series, seemingly, and there's nobody there anymore. And here in Baltimore, where like 1 minute it's, you know, they're winning games in Machado, and the next minute they're going to lose 110 games and nobody's there. You told me the Red Sox, there's a little fall from grace. Obviously, they've got managerial issues and calling press conference, whatever they're doing, right? But sports in general, and then the Patriots are going to ask for a lot of money, right? Super Bowl money from back in the day when this thing clears up and everybody to drive down one and do their tailgates. We're all going to go back to life as normal and 2022 or 3 or 4 or whatever. I don't know. I am very concerned if you're not winning, and I'm very concerned for sports going off the radar. I mean, you and I talked about our plight as old sports writer guys or whatever we are at this point. But the plight for these franchises, I mean, I see where the Orioles are in trying to rebuild something that sounds like what you and I were talking about with Earl Weaver in 1979, or even what sounds like Buck Showalter, which feels like a long time ago, if you get the invoice after the plague next year.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nestor. These leagues cannot sustain what we've been seeing. It's been nice to have a television product, and sometimes when you're watching the product, you can kind of forget that there's actually no one at these games and it's an empty place. And but you've done both, and you're right. When you're there, it's kind of depressing to be there. And the experience of that we knew is not replicated. It's very hollow. It's like going to watch a practice or a scrimmage or a high school baseball game or something where there's just, you know, it's nice and it's competitive, but you just don't get that buzz to it. And the owners,
you know what I've likened it to, Dan? You're a rock and roll guy, right? Like, if we could go see the Stones play anywhere we want, anywhere, a small place, a big place, and see them alone, completely alone, in a sound check, would that really be a better experience than seeing them with people? There's just no way.
It is not. Patently is not. And so you lose that. And ownership, I mean, you know, none of us are feeling sorry for the owners. Their capital gains are always there. And TV revenues, but this is a bath. This is a bath for them, and it's not sustainable. And you know, the bill's going to come due, and you know, some of the ancillary, you know, spillage, the losses are we're seeing with the front offices and cutting 10%, and you know, hardworking people that work long days and don't make big money, you know, they're paying the price for this. And then not to mention all your concessionaires, your parking lot people, you know, your support staff at the venues. This is very tough in the economy because it's just. It's nice to have these TV shows, but it's nowhere near what we had.
Well, I'm thinking of the value of it when it comes back and what people are going to place the value of, whether their dollar is going to be going to a concert at Merriweather Post Pavilion or whether it's going to be, hey, I enjoyed taking long walks for free on Tuesday nights with my wife in the woods. It didn't cost anything beside the pretzels we bought on the way home, you know. There's a little bit of that I think we've all found other things, and I think America, specifically through sports, has found other things. Maybe not on Sunday afternoon or Monday night for this league, right? Because people love the league. And that's black, white, east, west, red, blue, purple, in between. People around the world love the league. But basketball, certainly baseball, hockey, the Masters this week, we'll find out that people are like, you know, I'm going to find something else to do. And across the board, I'm wondering how attractive it's going to be to come back to.
It is a good point because we're not seeing the kind of ratings we thought you would see. And it started in the middle of the summer when the NBA got going and they were deep and just not good ratings. And people tried to blame it on Black Lives Matter and all these other things. But I mean, it was just people, like you say, they found something else to do. And there's a lot else. There's a lot on the dial. The election certainly took over for people watching that. And you're right. It's you know, what is the world that we're coming back to? One example, I mean, it's a small thing, but like it's been proven that you're never going to have those broadcast crews on site anymore, you know, to do the games. It's just not necessary. No more Chuck Thompson and Bill O'Donnell, you know, going around the country, you know, joining, watching the teams from the site. You just don't need it. Here in Boston, we had Jerry Remy and Dennis Eckersley and Dave O'Brien in studio in Watertown. Red Sox are playing Atlanta, wherever, and the fans can't tell the difference. So there will be significant changes to the way everything's done once this is over.
Dan Shaughnessy here talking sports and life. You have been pretty forward in your politics and where the country's going. I guess in the aftermath of all this, sort of some healing and some sort of calm and whatever there's going to be, sports is sort of the weird thing that brings us together. And this league and these weekends, and, you know, my dad would always talk to me about after Kennedy being shot in Dallas, he would just talk about football after that. And people always ask me about football, and I've talked 30 years, and I think there's something about the holidays. I think there's something about Thanksgiving. I think there's something about the world stopping and people watching football that's happened in the cold weather as the leaves change in cities, college football on Saturdays. Football is this really weird thread that we could still really vehemently disagree about, like life, the rest of life, everything. And if the only way we know someone, and I found this out through my experience in 30 years of having this incredible audience and these relationships with people, that I really didn't know people a whole lot until recently, but when you only know them through sports and you're all wearing a Ray Lewis jersey or a Joe Flacco jersey, or, you know, in your case, if it's Bruins or Celtics, or that it is something that really does bring people together, and I'm not sure what else does.
No, I think that's a good point. I know that even if I don't necessarily lock down or pay attention to who's winning, whatever, I just have it on. And that's a big thing. Certainly, I think in a lot of households on Thanksgiving, you know, it's like while you're making pies or taking the turkey out of the oven, the Lions are on in the background. You see the Lions helmets.
And they're usually losing.
And they're usually losing. These are traditions that we come to trust, and it makes us feel somehow comfortable and at home, that things are semi-normal. I think that anything that makes you feel a little bit normal, that's a good thing these days, because everybody's world has just been rocked. It's a tough time.
We don't have Alex Trebek anymore, man.
Yeah,
what's going on?
You know, and that'll be something, because I think the last episode's going to air like at Christmas, and that'll be one last goodbye. But what a send-off. What a brave guy, and just I love how he just became part of America.
You know, I love how he's been feeded for knowledge, you know, during this particular time. You know what I mean? Like that he was known for knowledge. And as it once said on the outside of Faber College in Animal House, you know, knowledge is good. Right, Dan Shaughnessy?
That is absolutely true. And I was a clue on Jeopardy like 15 years ago or something. And it was the only time that my mother-in-law thought I had a real job. I mean, the fact that, because she watched Jeopardy every night, and I was kind of a suspect, you know, does this guy have a job or what?
Was it a Bambino thing? Had to be, right?
It was had to do with Red Sox Nation, and it was a citizen of this group, and, you know, book titled by Dan Shaughnessy, and boy, that got, the only two people that saw it were my mother-in-law and my daughter at college. So those are the people who watch Jeopardy.
Hey, man, I watch Jeopardy. It's funny, my wife and I were watching, we started to watch it. I don't know why, because I'm outraged TV at 7 p.m. just doesn't go, and we're having dinner or whatever. Yeah. Sometimes it's a little like, you know, Guy Fieri or whatever we would do. But we've gotten into Jeopardy, and my wife and I play. And she hit me like 3 weeks ago. She's like, you should be on Jeopardy. I'm like, I mean, I'm like couch good and not like go on Jeopardy and win good with 18th century architecture or literature. And I guess for all of us with Alex Trebek, we all want to meet somebody that's smart, right? Like we all, any of us that went to college or write for a living, love us some Ken Jennings, right?
Absolutely. There was a sports writer in Cleveland, Bill Livingston, and he was on. And I my estimation of him went up years later. Whenever I'd go to Cleveland, I'd want to talk to him about what it was like. He didn't win, but just the fact that I knew somebody who was a contestant, it was cool.
This is the point in the show where I call you Hall of Famer, because I was going to do that in the beginning. Anything on baseball you want to say just about it, to end this thing about fixing it or where it's going in the aftermath of this mess?
Oh, my God. My heart bleeds for the game, and I love baseball. I'm a baseball guy, and I mean, you guys got the situation with the team there, but the team that finished ahead of the Red Sox this year, I may add. But just the state of the game and the pace of play, it's just – it's not that the games are too long, but it's that nothing's happening. And this notion of striking everybody out, and walk, strikeouts, and homers, the true outcomes, the pace of play, the fact that the players don't see anything wrong with it. Even those good World Series games, and those were good games. But 420 is a lot to ask, and young people aren't going to do it. So you can't have a situation where this generation of older people who love the game are going to go off into the sunset and not be replaced by young people. They've got to figure something out to help pace of play so that things are happening during the game and we're not standing around waiting for a 3-2 count, foul off four more balls, and then pound a strike three.
14 years ago, Angelos took my press pass, Dan, after 21 years of covering the team, and I still get my kicks when Janet Marie Smith, puts up pictures with her kids at the end of winning a World Series as a Dodger, and Adam Kolarik, who has a very special relationship with my partner Don Moeller's nephew, who's from Catonsville, a Baltimore kid. His dad's very involved in doing cool charity baseball stuff here in Baltimore, in Southwest Baltimore. So, you know, there's an angle. Even when you team stinks, there's always an angle because it's Baltimore and baseball, right? I mean, you think that that's sort of like that there's no chance the Orioles would ever be in jeopardy of leaving Baltimore?
Oh, man, it'd bite your tongue. I can't even think about that. I'm not going to entertain that.
But okay, good.
Never say never. So, and I mean, I know the Colts left and the old timers will be shocked to hear about this stuff. So I don't want to go there. It's just, I couldn't be in a world where there's no Orioles in Baltimore.
It's a bad time to be looking to do a lease right now, I think, anywhere in America for any team, any franchise, any sports team. Dan, you're always kind with your time and generous and great with your insights. Good luck with the Walton thing chasing him down. I'll certainly send you over a link. I'll share you share my link, and it's a picture of a younger version of both of us. How about that? I'll just leave it at that.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Nestor. Enjoyed it.
Dan Shaughnessy, the Hall of Famer. He's up in Boston still doing it. Patriots, Celtics, Red Sox. The Bambino, the curse is all long since over, and now it's the new curse trying to pick up baseball and get us all to come back and want to go have a Fenway Frank on Yawkey sometime soon for less than $10. Ness at BaltimorePositive.com finds me. We have merged the streams between WNST.net and all of the cool stuff we're doing in the aftermath of Joe Biden's New America. We are WNST.net, AM 1570. Taos in Baltimore, we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.